This is CliffCentral.com. Okay, it's CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. A little bit of music to get you going this morning with Dr. Kucho, Gregor Salto, and Can't Stop Playing. Can't Stop Playing. What?
Doctor who?
Dr. Kucho.
Dr. Kucho. Yeah. Okay. We have Dr. Malinga, Dr. Kumalo, and Dr. Kucho.
Hey, that's the thing. So there's lots of news. I got to start off with something, and every time anyone important dies, and this is the first major sort of celebrity death of 2018, I try to use it as an opportunity to kind of listen back to some of their music. And Dolores O'Riordan, who is the lead singer of the Cranberries, died at age 46. Did you hear about this? First major celebrity death of 2018.
Yeah, it is trending on the Twitter. Well, the Cranberries are trending.
Yeah, she sold more than 40 million records. They can't explain her death. The news was confirmed by her publicist. No cause of death has been announced. They had to cancel a tour with reunited Cranberries in 2017 because of a back problem that she was having. And she's been in London for a recording session. A statement described the death as sudden and added family members are devastated to hear the breaking news and have requested privacy at this difficult time. And then the rest of the band said, "We are devastated at the passing of our friend Dolores. She was an extraordinary talent and we feel very privileged to have been part of her life from 1989 when we started the Cranberries. The world has lost a true artist today." That's from Noel, Mike and Fergal. They're the three other guys in the band. They're Irish band, Cranberries. You remember their songs, anybody?
I know exactly one song, and then that's it.
Okay, tell me which one you remember.
Linger.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go with the with Zombies, which is a much, much bigger hit for them. But all right. You know Zombies?
It sounds familiar.
Okay, let me play a couple of these for you, and then we can educate Sia at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because, you know, like, Sia doesn't know any of these things.
Yeah, that's Cranberries.
All right.
I was like, what fruit salad is gone now?
No, Sia, it's not a fruit salad.
I feel bad, but I don't know her.
All right, so let's go straight to the song that Mabali said she knew first, and that's this one. You might recognize her voice. And you remember this time last year, we were already starting to worry about which celebrities would die last year. She wasn't even on the list.
46, man.
Yeah, no, it's young. All right, come on, Dolores, get to the chorus.
Oh.
It was a long intro.
It was a long time ago. Well, this thing's had 135 million views on YouTube, this song. No familiarity yet?
No, sounds very nice.
Maybe not. Here it comes. All right. Go. Do you have to let it linger?
That song featured in many a teenage rom-com movie.
So many.
That's the vision that I had in my head. Yeah. I was like, well, if Ally McBeal had to have a new choice of a theme song, Dawson's Creek,
yes,
this would be it.
Yeah, that's quite right.
Yeah.
Damn straight. All right.
Very distinct voice that she had.
Yeah, sort of a very soft, sort of Irish folky voice. Here's another song, just to give you a little more. Actually, a lot of songs this woman sang.
Oh,
know this. Oh. Okay,
so we've broken right. through. Yes. Okay. You didn't know it, but you knew Dolores O'Riordan.
What's this for?
All right, so that's Dreams by the Cranberries. Yeah, Dreams.
I'm sure I know it from an ad, though.
It's quite possible, and then maybe you know this. It's called When You're Gone. I don't know if you know that one. It's not so well known. And then there's this one, too, which I think a lot of people knew. This is like her story to her family. And I always used to mock this because she goes, my father, father told me. Listen to this. It's what? Pretty. Listen.
Oh, yeah. You hear what I mean? Listen.
You are a child.
I know. That's
how I remember stuff.
Tell me it doesn't sound like that. Yeah, listen.
Goes what I told you just now. Listen. Does anyone care? Happiness. Words when I was young and we didn't give it because we were raised to see life as fun. Take it if we can. All right, so that's called Ode to My Family, and then probably the biggest hit of all, a song that I'm sure everybody knows, and even if you don't know it well, you probably heard it once or twice somewhere, someone has been playing it, and you thought, oh, that's an interesting sounding song. It was easily their biggest hit, sold most of their records on the back of this song, and I suppose it's also the song that people will think of most of the time when they hear the name Dolores O'Riordan. And just to fill you in, she died in London just yesterday. First major celebrity death of the year. So a lot of people talking about her. All right, let's get straight into Zombie, which is probably the most famous song that the Cranberries ever did. If I can get the goddamn thing to play.
Yeah, it's kind of tripping you up a little bit.
How irritating. Let me just see if I can find a better version of this.
She has a bit of a Shakiran suit to her.
Mm.
She sings like she has a bubble in her tongue.
Father heard me. It heard me when I was out there.
Is it Shakira?
I remember she did this long before Shakira. So,
so Shakira give credit where it's due. Stole it from her.
Right.
Well, in 2003, the band apparently split up. So, you know, as tends to happen with bands sometimes. And then there's a story about how in 2014, O'Riordan was arrested after being accused of assaulting three police officers and a flight attendant during one of her flights.
Oh, that's badass.
Which she did.
Eat that, Cardi B. Yeah.
Which she did plead guilty to, and she was fined over $6,000.
Three police officers?
Three police officers.
And a flight attendant. Did she battle with the booze or anything?
Everybody in the 90s battled with the booze.
Yeah. There we go.
All right, so just in case you're wondering, I'll play you a clip of Zombie from the David Letterman show. I think you might like that.
So this is a live performance.
Yeah, a live version where she appeared on David Letterman, did it live, and everybody thought she was great. And by the way, that was 1994. How's that? Mm. Talk about long ago. I mean, the sound quality, it sounds like it was 1963, but then maybe that's my... I don't know. I'm very. It's amazing how sound has moved on. So here she is. She's live on The Late Show with David Letterman, all the way back in 1994.
But right here, it's entitled "No Need to Argue." Folks, do me a favor, please welcome, and just in time for Thanksgiving, the Cranberries.
How's that, huh?
This sounds like it should make the list of top 10 most incredible difficult songs to do live.
Oh, for sure.
Can you imagine getting an Idols contestant to do this song live and not butcher it?
No, that's true. I can tell you from experience they'd screw it up.
Oh, no, that would be tough to do live.
It's a great song, though, and that song was probably the one that kind of made the most difference in their career. But someone asked me yesterday, so how did she die? So I said, with their tanks and their bombs and their guns and their bombs in your head, they're fighting.
Seriously. Oh, too soon.
Yeah, I know. I can't help it. I'm so insensitive. But there we go. She was a part of my kind of adolescence, and I'm very glad that I knew the Cranberries music. And I'm very, very sad about Dolores O'Riordan. I really am. I'm just a monster who can't deal with emotions.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But there we go. Dolores O'Riordan of the Cranberries, the first major celebrity death of 2018.
And this also serves as a reminder that Kirk Douglas is still alive.
Oh.
Guys, he is still.
He's been on our death list for how long?
Way too long.
2 years now?
Didn't he make an appearance at the Golden Globes?
Yes,
he did. I was still trying to find proper audio of what he was trying to say.
You can't understand him. Well, even if he had perfect audio. Ay, ay, ay. He got a standing ovation at the Golden Globes. He went up with Catherine Zeta-Jones. That's his daughter-in-law, right?
I just found the entire situation
film
weird.
Kirk Douglas was on it.
No.
Kirk Douglas.
No.
I hate these things. Yeah. Do you often get those on YouTube?
Yes, where it's all automated. God. Why do people do that?
I don't know.
So the other day, funnily enough, I found the death pool mm-hmm. list that we created a few years ago.
Did anyone have Dolores O'Riordan?
No one. And no one even has Kirk Douglas.
What?
Which is weird.
I want to buy him. How much can I put in money to buy Kirk Douglas for
that? That is a gross oversight on our part.
How can we leave him out?
he's Meryl Streep,
he's 150 years old.
No Kirk Douglas.
Okay, who have I got?
Gareth, you did have Mendoza, and he's passed away.
Oh, okay. Hand it over. All right, I'll be prepared not to take that one. Who else do I have?
Okay, so for you, you have Mendoza, Paul McCartney, Jack Nicholson, Larry King, and Leanne Moore.
Well, we had to include ourselves on the list because then, you know, we're not completely insensitive.
Yes.
I still could do okay on Larry King.
Mm-hmm. Walla Walla Washington.
Right. How about Mabs?
And Jack Nicholson.
What's Mabale got?
Mabale has Stephen Hawking. You have Gareth as well.
Oh, those are both good ones, Mabs.
Phil Collins, Jimmy Carter, and Pierre Van Pletzer. Who's that?
I don't know.
Let's Google him.
But Jimmy Carter's a good one. He's the only... he's the oldest living president?
Oh, is he still alive?
Is he older than Bush Senior?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he was president two presidents before George H.W. Bush. It was Jimmy Carter, then the guy in between, before Reagan. God damn it.
Just challenge yourself. You'll get this.
I should know. Gerald Ford. Jimmy Carter, then Gerald Ford, then Ronald Reagan, then George H.W. Bush, then Bill Clinton, then George W. Bush, and then Barack Obama, and now Donald Trump.
Are you sure you didn't mean Pierre Van Pletzen?
Who's that?
That's a character from Seven Dolan, old...
Really?
Oh, Obas.
Yeah, that
Pierre, that's the actor's
one
real
for you
name.
To have. I wouldn't worry about that. How about you, Sia? What do you got?
I inherited Damon's list.
Shame, I'm sorry.
Which is Mabale.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Clive Davis, Mick Jagger,
right.
Meryl Streep,
mm-hmm.
Rian van Kruiwagen, and Barbara Walters.
That's a tough list. Ooh. I think you're very badly placed. Mabs has got the best one there.
Ben has John. Bless his soul. Michael Flex is the one who drew this up.
And he can't spell.
So that's, I'm like, what is going on here?
Tell me who Ben's got.
If I read it directly, it's John Aniston.
It's Jennifer Aniston's dad, yeah.
So that's, but then the second person on the list is John Voight.
That's
which is Angelina Jolie's dad.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where he got confused.
All right.
Bless his heart. Clint Eastwood, George Bush Sr., and then Ben also has Michael Flex.
Oh, okay.
And
all right, that's enough for us to work on at the moment. But
we need to revise.
I seriously think that we got to throw in Kirk Douglas. There's a bunch of obvious ones here, and frankly, you know, incumbent presidents like Donald Trump,
Prince Charles.
I mean,
Prince Philip,
the Queen.
Yeah.
These people are not gonna last forever. So we got to watch them.
Philip, you better not die before the wedding and ruin it. You just take your little old body and push on through to May the 19th, bro.
All right, well, there are actually some news stories going on. I don't know if you've heard about this one, but this, you know, Peter Hain, Lord Peter Hain, he's the one who was called Hain the Pain during South Africa's apartheid years because he earned that name for encouraging sanctions against the old government. He played a key role in applying political pressure in the international arena to force some change in South Africa. And he's becoming a pain for UK corporates who are tainted by graft in the new South Africa. He's taken aim at HSBC because they facilitated, according to him, money laundering. And he's called on the authorities in the UK and the EU to investigate Gupta-linked bank accounts. UK firms linked to misconduct by the Guptas have included disgraced PR agency Bell Pottinger. So we're only too happy about that, right? And they collapsed after a Dirty Tricks campaign was exposed. KPMG and management consultancy McKinsey. Hogan Lovells stands accused of a whitewash in a so-called independent investigation into shenanigans at SARS. And Lord Peter Hain has also explained to the House of Lords why the spotlight is on Hogan Lovells. He also has written to Britain's law watchdog, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, requesting an inquiry into Hogan Lovells' conduct. So there's a lot going on with Peter Hain, who we actually interviewed not so long ago when he came to South Africa. It was mostly about what had been going on at that time, but I think we touched on his feelings around state capture, and we should maybe play that as a repeat at some point. So there's some interesting stuff coming in from someone who we can consider an ally overseas when it comes to fighting state capture. What else have you got, Mubs?
Well, you remember that BRCA gene that had Angelina Jolie put in the spotlight because she discovered that she had the gene, and then she decided to have preemptive a double mastectomy.
Yes, because it's usually a precursor for breast cancer.
Well, last week, scientists claimed to have made a new discovery, saying that having that breast cancer gene does not risk, or rather does not boost, the risk of death. So it would seem that they are now revealing some new information to try and say to people, hey now, just because you carry the gene doesn't mean that you should immediately march into your surgeon's office and demand that double mastectomy.
Hmm.
In fact,
what a waste of Angelina Jolie city.
It was such a big story at the time. Oh no, I mean, I'm sure Angelina had reconstructive surgery.
Yes, she did, but still.
They built new boobs for her.
How sad.
Now, in fact, according to the scientists, they say that they may have a survival advantage, actually, over non-carriers of the gene if diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. The discovery has been made by a team that is being led by Diana Eccles of the University of Southampton, mm-hmm. and it has been published in the journal The Lancet Oncology. Women diagnosed with early breast cancer who carry the BRCA mutation are often offered double mastectomies soon after their diagnosis or chemotherapy treatment. Now, our findings, according to Diana, suggest that this surgery does not have to be immediately undertaken along with the other treatment. According to the American Cancer Society, women with the mutation have a 7 in 10 chance of getting breast cancer. This is what they're told by the age of 80. They are also more likely to get it at a younger age than other women. But now it would seem that these scientists are saying, but hold your horses before you demand that you have your breasts removed.
Okay, don't do it. Ladies, just don't rush to get your breasts lopped off.
But I mean, this is a problem with medicine, is that over time, more studies are done, more information becomes available, right. And then very quickly the narrative or the script could change.
Yeah. Yeah, rather just, you know, I reckon we're going to get to a point very soon in the next 5 to 10 years where we'll be able to figure out how to stop all these cancers. And it wouldn't be a moment too soon. I just feel bad for all the people who've died before this treatment came along. I mean, already they're starting to find ways to prevent the spread of cancer. And who knows what marvels medical science will turn up in the next while. We're making progress every single day. So who could tell? Here's something interesting. Michelle says, did you hear about the false alarm on Hawaii about an attack from nuclear North Korea? Yeah, some guy who's meant to be in charge of Hawaii pressed the panic button and assumed that North Korea were going to attack. There was going to be an imminent nuclear attack from North Korea. And it got everyone in Hawaii very, very worried. And they said, no, false alarm.
Oh, dear.
But that's not the kind of false alarm you need.
Definitely not.
That would scare the living bejesus out of me. And someone says, please don't let Sia sing again. He's got hidden talent. He should keep it hidden. I know my opinion doesn't count, but fuck it, man.
I was just imitating the cranberries.
Right, stop. If Dolores O'Riordan ever made a comeback, she would be the zombie that she's always been singing about.
Guys.
Yes. Oh,
you do not skip a beat when it comes to these jokes.
And someone says, in an imaginary TV series about my angsty teenage years, the soundtrack would definitely include the Cranberries. Rest in peace, Dolores. Gareth, can you please call for a boycott on all shopping centers and malls that charge for parking? This grinds my balls, really. Why must we shop at these malls and then support the tenants and still pay for parking?
Because the point of life is for those who can to make more money out of you.
Mm.
Couldn't have said it better.
There we go. Someone says, I've been in the studio since 4 a.m. Thank you for the company this fine morning. That's from Graham. So Graham's sitting in the studio busy doing some work. A lot of people waking up early in the morning to get things done. I know a lot of people wake up and go to gym first thing in the morning. But if you're one of those people who works really, really early in the day, well, we're here to keep you company live. You can always listen to us on podcast too, which is what a lot of people do. Just go to cliffcentral.com and download your favorite podcasts.
But it makes sense, though. You're still wide awake and fresh in the morning
mm-hmm.
to get your day started.
Right. Best time to do work, as they say. I don't know.
Okay.
Some people disagree.
If you want to talk about progress, tell me how you feel about this. Mm-hmm. A new generation of robots that are aimed to read your feelings, Sia. They want to tap into your emotions. The robot called Forpheus does more than play a mean game of table tennis. It can read body language to gauge its opponent's ability. It can offer advice as well as encouragement. It has been developed to showcase exactly this kind of technology, according to Keith Kirsten of Japan-based Omron Automation, saying it will try to understand your mood and your playing ability and predict a better about your next shot. We don't sell ping pong robots, but we are using Forpheus to show how technology works with people, according to Kirsten. Forpheus is among several devices that were shown at last week's Consumer Electronics Show, which highlight how robots can become more human-like by acquiring emotional intelligence and empathy. This is the beginning of the end, people.
Yeah.
This is the beginning. This is the beginning of when they read us and then they plot their takeover. This makes me very nervous.
So what if the robot can say, good morning, my buddy. I see you're feeling a little anxious this morning. You're not going to like that at all.
I'm going to phone the manufacturer and I'm going to ask, how do I disable this thing? How do I reset?
Women aren't going to like this because the robot's going to read their real emotion. And women are really good at saying, I'm not feeling that way.
Well, on the flip side, though, having someone who can read your emotion and know what and how you're feeling, that could also work well.
I think for a lot of people, it could end up with sort of therapy in-house.
Sia, come, let me hug you. You're feeling bad. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Please do.
Okay, and then what happens when they start manipulating you through your feelings and emotions?
Hey. No. This is assuming, though, that in the coding, the robot has been told to manipulate you. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what good that would do the robot.
Well, I mean, if a human is responsible for coding the machine, then at the end, ultimately, you still have a human.
What's the robot going to manipulate you into doing? What does the robot want from
you? Listen, I don't know. I don't like the idea of robots now suddenly knowing how I feel.
Yeah.
No!
Like other humans can't tell?
See?
Yeah, but you're just a human. Now it's a machine. No, guys.
Can't do it.
No, guys. When people like Stephen Hawking are warning us of the machines taking over, shouldn't we be paying attention to these guys?
Ah, please. His voice is a machine. He's got a cheek.
He's already manipulated by the robots.
No one's heard what he actually sounds like because of the machines. That's just having a go at the machines. What would you be... You wouldn't be able to say anything if it wasn't for the machines, Stephen.
Honda, which is another Japanese auto giant, also launched a new robotics program called Empower Experience Empathy. Which includes robots which show compassion to humans.
Yes.
With a variety of facial expressions.
I think that could do a lot of good. Let me be devil's advocate here, because I understand why you're uncomfortable with the machines knowing how you feel. But imagine if the machine could dispense with therapy. It can actually get you feeling better. So if you start your day badly, let's say you've woken up and you're full of nervous and anxious energy about something you've got to do that day, and the machine can say to you, look, let's sit down and talk about this for 5 minutes. And because it's so able to read your feelings, it can also make you feel better. So it'll say to you, look, you're looking great. You're going to have a terrific day. You're going to do very well in that job interview that you're so nervous about. Just look in the mirror and smile and put your best foot forward. We all love you. The robots love you.
You know, all the robots love you, even if the humans don't.
Yeah. And I will tell the robots that meet you at the interview through the internet, I'll tell them you're coming, and they'll make it easy for you. Imagine that. I don't think that's a bad thing. Imagine they could say, I'll tell you what the robot of the guy who's going to give you the interview is thinking. He's also having a bad morning.
I wonder what their idea was in creating these robots who can empathize.
The idea is that we want to get to a point where...
They're trying to make them more human. I think that's the idea.
Yeah, where we feel more comfortable with machines, where we don't freak out like Mubs just did about them knowing our feelings, because we think, well, they're there to help us. And look, it's not that far off. These facial recognition phones, I mean... They can pick up your facial features, so they can also pick up changes in your facial features. So they can say, oh, well, she's frowning. She's not having a great day. So your phone will say, forget about a big robot that moves around your house. Your phone will eventually say to you, are you okay?
But these robots will also need a filter. Like, I don't want when my mother-in-law is around and the robot says, your mother-in-law, who you hate, is at the door. See, like, they need a filter to prepare us.
I think you can, like Mub says, you could switch it off. You disable certain functions. So for some people, they won't want their robot to read their feelings.
Mm.
I don't know that I'd want that necessarily. Roll around the house, clean it up. You know, what is this robot called?
Forpheus,
clean the floor and the Forpheus floor. Clean the floor and download the latest series of this from Netflix for me, and make sure that I have a shopping list sent to my phone at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
And that's it.
But do we want to talk about your feet? No, Forpheus, no. You can disable that function. No. I could care less. Do you want to talk about some? No, it's fine. I'm all right. Don't you worry about me.
But you are right. For those people who just love
people who
talking,
want to talk.
Or maybe people
you'll never
who...
believe what my brother did to me at the office.
And lonely people. You know,
lonely people, yeah.
Old people, maybe, that they live at home and they watch soap operas. This could be a much more useful way for them to spend their time talking to the robot.
Listen, if we already have robotic sex dolls, then what's the harm in having a robotic therapist as well?
Sure. You download the Freudian package, and you get like a good Freudian therapist, right? Yeah, Forpheus the Freudian. He can come in and help you with your family issues, maybe your relationship issues.
Oh my goodness.
Download the romantic software package, and then he could talk you through a relationship breakup. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Oh, no.
And you wouldn't have to pay for the time. The therapist isn't sitting there with their watch, checking on the time, going, oh, your time is up. I think this would be great, especially for people who've had tough lives and they don't really have anyone to talk to and they don't feel they can open up to a stranger. Because, you know, you're more worried about people, to answer Mubs' question. Wouldn't you be more worried about people manipulating you because they know your feelings?
And judging you. Oh, that's
because people have far more obviously, material motives. People will try to get things out of you. Maybe they want to manipulate you a lot more than a robot will. What's the robot going to get? Extra power? Plug me in for longer, you know. I would rather, if I were someone who needed this, I would rather trust the robot therapist than the human one. And the human one gets distracted easily. The robot's totally focused on you. The human one's thinking about their shopping list, and they're thinking about what they've got to do after this therapy session, and they're going,
Oh, hour's up.
Time's up. The robot's like, would you like to carry on for another hour?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, yes. I really would like to get my high school sweetheart off my mind once and for all. Let's keep going for 6 hours, shall we, Forpheus?
Oh.
Forpheus is like, I would love to.
Can
you imagine? Some people would love that. Those people who are needy, you meet them all the time. You know the kind of people I'm talking about. They want to talk about themselves nonstop. Put Forpheus in front of them. You don't have to put some human through that trauma.
I'd be ready to gift a few people in my life, Forpheus. Just
sure.
Get off my back.
Right.
I don't want to hear about breaking up with your boyfriend for the fourth time.
Yeah, your friend pitches up at your apartment. They knock on your door. They're like, I need to come in. I need to talk to you. I've just broken up with my girlfriend or boyfriend. You're like, let me put you in the room with Forpheus. I'm busy cooking sup. I don't give two shits about your relationship, but here's Forpheus. He really cares. Hi, let's talk about your feelings.
Oh.
It's great. Come on, why not? And they can implement all the finest, best learning that the world of psychology and psychiatry has. And they could say to you, this is the route to follow. Every therapist can be putting stuff into the network the whole time, so you get different ways of treatment, and the robot can decide based on you which treatment is better. You eliminate human error, and they can even suggest medication. They can't prescribe it, but they can suggest it. So Forpheus then sends a script to an actual psychiatrist who then sees you once. You're only going to go to them once. And Forpheus' whole diagnosis is in there. And that psychiatrist looks at it and goes, yep, this person needs some Zoloft.
You are pitching this very well.
It's a solution. It's not a problem.
Great, but I do, at the back of my head, I have this tiny little voice that says, this is only just the beginning.
Well,
of the takeover.
But you're paranoid, Sia.
I'm paranoid on this one as well.
Ah, come on.
Forpheus will make us betray our family. Why do you need your family anyway? You have me, all you've ever wanted. You're like, yes, Forpheus, yes. You stay with Forpheus, you have sex with Forpheus. Ooh, next thing, Forpheus controls you.
For what? What does Forpheus want?
Forpheus wants to take over the world. Forpheus.
What, through marrying CSM
Wendy? Will say, first, I've just taken over him. Let's now take over more.
You're likely to get that crap from humans. Trust me. And we've trusted humans. We've trusted each other for far too long.
And at least you can punch a human in the throat and they give up and they curl up
just
and cry.
Unplug Forpheus.
Oh, okay. What if he's picked up some power within himself?
Imagine someone confronts their real self. Like Forpheus says, oh, you're a complete narcissistic bastard. And then they go, I hate you, Forpheus. They unplug it. And that's the end of their therapy.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Only some people beginning. Won't be able to no handle thanks. The truth. Mm-mm. Forpheus's truth.
I'm sure there are people who storm out of psychologists' rooms as well. So yeah, let's do this. And in this country, we don't have enough social workers to go around.
Mm-hmm.
We should employ a whole bunch of Forphii.
Oh, plural of Forpheus. Look at you, fancy.
All right. Anything else in the news we need to know about?
Well, Mark Wahlberg and his team have taken the strategic route in dealing with the story about how he was paid so much more money than his co-star Michelle Williams to reshoot some of those scenes with Kevin Spacey after he was booted off the movie. He is now donating all of that money to a woman's cause in Michelle Williams's name, Check and Mate.
Isn't that nice?
That's how you deal with it.
Donated straight to Michelle Williams.
That's how you wrap up a scandal. You outsmart. Just do it.
What shows even more inequality in just the world that we live in is the fact that I now discovered that Mark Wahlberg isn't even the main character in the movie. I just thought he was the lead, hence why he was getting 1 point something million for the reshoot. He's actually a secondary character. Michelle Williams is the first and primary character, and she was paid $1,000.
Well, yeah. Michelle Williams should get new management. Mm-hmm. They're obviously not fighting for her enough.
Well, the funny thing was that she and he had the same management for this movie. So she must find someone better.
Yeah, she must release that person and say, well, you're not looking out for my best interests, obviously. And then she should shop around.
Here's one last story before we go to run about cryptocurrencies this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who baked the cake for the ANC's birthday bash?
Who has that tender?
Guess. Who would be the least likely person to bake the cake for the ANC's birthday bash?
Is it someone we know? Like has been in
well,
the
no,
news?
No, it's not a famous person, but... What group of people would you think are least likely to make the cake for the ANC?
Don't tell me it's like Charlie's Bakery.
Is it an old white tanny from Orania or something?
It's a DA member.
Yes, there we go.
The ANC's birthday cake was baked by a DA member.
Hey, money's money.
A registered card-carrying DA member. How do you like that?
You got to do what you got to do for some cash.
You've got to be able to separate business from politics.
And everyone has a price. No, I will not stand for the ANC. Listen, we'll pay you $5,000. Okay, fine. Okay. Okay, I'll do it.
But I mean, who's that more embarrassing for the DA member or for the ANC, that they got a DA member to do their cake because they couldn't find an ANC member to do it?
I think, boy.
But huh? Is this the cake that had...
That big, ugly...
Yeah, it was a very disappointing end result, that cake.
And did you see that...
sabotage,
you saw that banner, right, where they called someone the third president?
Oh, yes, Cyril. Cyril. Instead of 30th, the banner read 3rd. So I saw the comedian Tats Ngonzo said, "Bonang's editor strikes again."
That's beautiful. All right, coming up, Run Noiner, and we'll talk about cryptocurrencies. We'll find out what the latest news is. All of that on the way. Enrique Iglesias, the slightly less talented son of Julio Iglesias.
Shame.
Yeah, I know.
But he's still done okay for
himself. Done all right. Shame. He's not a complete embarrassment to his family. That's called Súbeme la Radio, which I think means radio's dead.
Oh. Well, there you go then.
I don't know. Run is here. Crypto Man Run. You can find him on Twitter. Everybody's talking crypto. I went out this weekend, and again, every single conversation. You get it from the weirdest places and the weirdest people, and it just shows you that this is about democratizing a new way of thinking about money, a new way of thinking about value, a new way of thinking about currency. So everyone's talking about it, and we check in with Run every couple of days to just find out what's going on. First of all, welcome. There's stuff going on with Bitcoin Wallet, CentB, right?
Yes,
this guy's been talking, Lorian Gamaroff.
Yes, so he's a South African. He's one of the most knowledgeable guys on crypto. I haven't seen the CentB product because the product that they released wasn't for the Apple; it was for Android.
Okay.
And I'm on an Apple phone, so I couldn't test it. But he's great, and he's very talented, and one of the South Africans that's really making a difference. He's one of the early entrants into Bitcoin.
Well, I saw you made a list of the 100 most influential people in cryptocurrency the other day.
To my surprise, I got the list. I opened the list. I'm number 79 in the top 100 of most influential in the world.
I was scrolling, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to know anyone. And then suddenly, boom, you pop up. So Run is one of the 100 most influential people in cryptocurrencies in the world right now. So congrats on that front. Ooh. I saw also our mutual friend Vinny Lingham's on the list. And now this guy, he's got to be on there too, Lorian Gamaroff.
Yeah, Lorian isn't one of those guys that puts himself out there. So he's one of the old entrants into blockchain, and he is one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And to be honest, he taught me a lot of what I know about Bitcoin. He was the guy that got me started. And but he's under the radar, and he's one of those guys that keeps his head down and keeps working.
Brilliant. I reckon there are probably a lot of other South Africans who have entered the millions with cryptocurrency.
Yeah, there's guys like Simon Dingle. I mean, Simon Dingle.
Simon's smart.
He's very smart. He's one of the most knowledgeable, another one of those most knowledgeable guys out there.
Well, Simon's going to be starting a little podcast with us too soon, so keep an eye on that. But let's talk quickly about this Bitcoin wallet CentB and why this is important. He says Bitcoin is going to die a horrible death.
So Gamaroff he's bought into this Bitcoin Cash thing. Now I must say I'm also a big bull on Bitcoin Cash. I think that Bitcoin, the way that it's structured, is going to be a store of value, and I think that Bitcoin Cash may be the more transactional cash-based system.
Mm-hmm.
So Lorian was one of the original Bitcoin guys, and he's very close to people like Dr. Craig Wright, and who at one point claimed he was Satoshi Nakamoto.
Mm-hmm.
So Lorian has now bought into Bitcoin Cash, and I think if I remember correctly, he sold most of his Bitcoin and moved his holdings into Bitcoin Cash.
So he's got a dog in the fight, and that's going to color his arguments.
He has an opinion. He has a very strong opinion, and he's back to horse. He's back to dog.
Sure. All right. Now that being the case, do you agree that in 2018 we will see Bitcoin die a horrible death, or will we just see a change in the function of Bitcoin?
Bitcoin's not going to die a horrible death. it may become smaller relative to the other cryptocurrencies. So let's go a little bit back. Last year we have a measure called the Bitcoin dominance. Mm-hmm. And the Bitcoin dominance percentage is the amount or the percentage that Bitcoin represents of the entire crypto market.
Right.
Now the whole of last year, Bitcoin dominance went from about 80 to 60 and it remained at about 60-65% of the total crypto market for a whole year. Today, if I look at the Bitcoin dominance, I think it's around 30%.
Oh, really?
So that's not such a bad thing, because what it means is there's new startups, money's flowing into the new startups, and therefore Bitcoin is becoming a lot less significant.
Right.
And that kind of makes sense, because think about it logically. If you believe in the blockchain and you believe that the blockchain is going to change every single industry in the world, and I think we are at that point already.
Sure.
It doesn't make sense that one token with one use case, which is a store of value, or maybe two use cases, a store of value and a currency, should keep 60% of the market.
It's crazy.
It didn't make logical sense, and I used to post about it quite frantically on Twitter saying it doesn't make sense. And now that's coming to fruition, and you can see that this morning the Bitcoin dominance is 34.4%.
Okay.
What's happening? Money is flowing into these new startups. We've had a frenzy of new startups starting. I spoke to a guy last night, and I'm featuring him on my show on Thursday night.
This is on CNBC?
CNBC Africa, right. Channel 410, 8:30. It's called Crypto Trader. It's the world's first televised cryptocurrency investment show, and actually still the only one in the world.
Okay.
He invests in ICOs, and he mentioned last night that he put $20,000 into an ICO called Icon, and a month later that $20,000 is $1 million. There was another one called Dragon Chain, and there are a whole lot of these. It seems that we're in this place now that if you can get your hands onto a good ICO, you make 50 to 60 times your money.
Jeez.
So the money's flowing. Guys are going, look, Bitcoin's mature. The market cap of Bitcoin is over $200 billion. To get it to go to $400 billion means that we have to get $200 billion of new money.
Mm-hmm.
But if I invest in one of these small ICOs that's raising $20 million, mm-hmm, and it goes to $100 million, I've made five times my money. So money's flowing out of Bitcoin, which is the stable, mature asset, and flowing into these riskier ICO-type assets. And now, in this market cycle, people are making money. But the crypto market has very fast cycles. So what happens is, as soon as some of these ICOs go bad, and we saw it this morning, the Bitcoin price this morning is down 4%, back right to 13,100.
Ripple's down 10% this morning.
Ripple's going to keep going down. I said it on the show last week. But the ICOs or the smaller caps are down 20 and 30%, which means that they are more responsive to market movement up and they're more responsive to market movement down. I think in the traditional markets, they call it a beta. And a beta, mm-hmm, is how responsive the token or the share is to the general market fluctuations. So these ICOs and smaller caps are much, much, much more volatile, but you can make a whole lot more money.
Now, can you on these ICOs put in buy orders?
No. So an ICO is essentially a bunch of people who are launching their own token.
Right.
And the process of launching your own token is you issue this thing called a white paper. A white paper is the roadmap,
mm-hmm,
and what you are inviting people to participate in. It's the equivalent of a stock market prospectus.
Okay.
And what you do then is you read the white paper and you decide if you want to contribute or not, and you put yourself on what they call a whitelist. A whitelist is a bunch of people who have had their identity verified and are ready to participate in an ICO. And then at a certain time, the gates open, and they say, if anybody wants, jump in. And it usually works on a first-come, first-serve. And they raise money. Once they've raised the money, they close the ICO. So say Gareth's raising $12 million for CliffCentral.com. Mm-hmm. You close your ICO, and then you issue tokens to anyone that was successful in the token sale. So
how does this affect, just before you carry on, how does this affect venture capital? I mean, this has changed the whole way that we view venture capital, particularly in tech startups. They used to have to go to a major company and ask them for an investment. Now you can do this, and you can raise the money that you need to get your company going without having to seek out one investor.
Pretty simple. Venture capital is dead.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact numbers, but I think about $4 billion has flowed into ICOs this year, or maybe even more now, and I'll talk about a specific ICO in a second. But I think at the time when $3 billion had flowed into ICO, something like less than $500 million had flowed into venture capital. So venture capital, in my mind, is absolutely dead. Why? Because the blockchain has made markets more efficient. I don't have to go to a venture capitalist.
And then it depends on a human factor of one person or whatever else it might be.
Go to the crowd. Let the crowd make a decision.
And if in their collective wisdom, they decide that your business is a good idea, they'll throw in money.
Venture capital is a form of centralization. It's people with a lot of money, centralized control of money.
Right.
And they make decisions. It's a form of centralization. Now, the blockchain's promise is to eliminate centralization. And so...
And unnecessary fees and clutter and bullshit.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So what I've heard is that there are a couple of new ICOs coming online soon, and some of these might be very interesting opportunities for people.
Yes. So there are 40 ICOs that come onto the market every single day. Every day there are 40 ICOs, that are, at least 40 that are coming onto the market. I must stress that a lot of them are scams and a lot of them are not great. And don't buy because your friends are telling you that there's a great ICO. You've got to do your due diligence, et cetera, et cetera. On Thursday night, and I'm not going to give away who the guest is, but on Thursday night, I'm interviewing someone on my show who's the king of ICOs. And what this guy does is he makes a spreadsheet based on all the data points, and he decides whether his ICOs are going to be successful or unsuccessful. His spreadsheet has been spot on, and he's hit in the last 2 weeks 5 tokens that have made over 50x profit in the ICO.
Wow.
So just trying to understand how genius his methodology is. Because so he goes through the fundamentals. He goes through whether there's a working piece of software, and he goes through whether there's a great team behind it and they've got a great roadmap. So he goes through
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. But he has a community of 20,000 people that contribute to the work.
Right.
So
he's crowdsourcing research.
So once he's got the fundamentals in place, he does something very smart. He plugs in a bunch of metrics, including how fast did their Twitter grow, how fast did their Telegram grow, how fast did their Reddit channel grow, etc., etc. And he looks at those data points, and based on the rate of acceleration of growth, he can forecast more or less where the ICO is going to open.
Just because that's the number of people involved in that company.
Correct. Now try and bring that back to old world shares. You know, most of the shares didn't even have a Twitter account, let alone a Reddit account. So it just shows that when you open this thing up and you become decentralized, you get a whole lot of new data points. And these new data points can give you amazing insight as to whether an ICO is going to open up or open down. And I've seen the spreadsheet, and I'm going to show it on my show on Thursday night. It's phenomenal. It's almost impossible to go wrong because you've got all the data points. And the data points have compared it to all ICOs with similar hype. So he can kind of forecast 2 weeks before the ICO exactly where the ICO is going to open and make a decision how much money to put in. It's absolutely incredible.
That is incredible. Can you tell me quickly about NEO? That's like Chinese Ethereum.
Yeah. So NEO, was the Chinese Ethereum. It was a very small company earlier on this year. It's the founder or the lead maintainer is a guy called Dai Hongfei. Very smart people who live in China. And at the time when they established NEO, they established it as the Chinese Ethereum. In other words, a platform for Chinese companies to raise ICOs. And then bang, came the Chinese government and banned all crypto trading. So everybody thought it was the end of NEO. So NEO put their head down and said, you know what, we're not going to be a platform for ICOs, but we're actually going to build real-world blockchain applications on our platform. And here we go. We're starting to see the results. You know, I'm really one of these people that doesn't believe in buying up these hyped tokens that have had a huge run. But I kind of get the feeling with NEO that it doesn't matter where you enter. Just get into it and hold it. Look for the dips. Buy NEO because I really think that this is one of those tokens that has a huge amount of potential and could take on Ethereum. I just want to lay it out for lay people what that actually means. When the internet launched, when TCP/IP launched, we didn't have a choice of which TCP/IP to back. So we kind of got given this thing and said, here's the internet, now use the internet as you wish. Now we're getting a choice as to which internet we want to use or which technology to power the internet we want to use.
Which on-ramp you want to get onto the highway on.
Yeah, which highway you want to get onto.
Right.
And so you've got like this competition between Ethereum and NEO, and there are a whole lot of others, which is quite exciting because you can now take multiple bets on multiple blockchains who may serve maybe different industries or different use cases or different applications. So I think that the play now is to get yourselves into as many of these platforms as possible. So it's almost like I say to you, Gareth, don't invest in a website because a website has a very high risk of not doing well. Rather invest in the internet, which is the platform that powers all websites. And don't only invest in one internet. Invest in 5 iterations of the internet. in the possibility that one or two of them will actually be the right ones.
Right.
And that's called you're investing in a platform, not necessarily in the applications on the platform.
Right. Okay. Let's just talk about junk food meeting junk money. Apparently, KFC have started selling Bitcoin Bucket.
Yeah, I saw something like that. I haven't confirmed it. I didn't know if it was a joke, but it seems like it's there.
Also, there's energy finance that's starting to happen with Bitcoin, right?
Yes. You say energy finance, you mean power.
Power, as in electricity.
It's one of the best use cases of Bitcoin. There's an Australian company which has done something incredible, the company called Power Ledger. Essentially, if you've got spare solar panels on your roof, you can sell them for tokens. You can enter their grid and you can sell your power for tokens. That that ICO was featured on my show. I think it's done 20x return on its ICOs. There's a South African company. I'm not sure when their ICO is going to be. It's called the Sun Exchange. And what they do is exactly that model. They put up solar panels in schools and, you know, and areas, and they let these schools earn money by selling tokens in the power generated. And that's generated by a startup in South Africa at an incubator called Techstars in Cape Town.
Fantastic. All right, so it's changing our life whether we like it or not. And all those people who keep saying, oh, this crypto stuff's a bubble, what do you say to them?
I don't think a lot of them are saying it anymore. You know, it's just so funny because we did a crypto meetup in Cape Town on Sunday. And after the crypto meetup, I was wearing a Bitcoin shirt and I went to eat some dinner at Willoughby's at the waterfront. And this lady, she must have been in her 70s, and her husband was sitting opposite, and he was also probably in his late 70s. And he looked at my shirt, he said, now that's a smart boy. And I looked at him and said, why? And he said, well, you clearly bought Bitcoin. And he started telling me about all these coins that he had bought. And then his wife pulled out her phone and she started showing me that she had bought Ripple. And that's the
someone in their 70s.
That's a 75-year-old couple. Then the waiter caught the conversation and the waiter gave me a 15-minute thesis as to why he thinks the Bitcoin price is actually just going to continue going up.
Wow.
So crypto is mainstream, whether you like it or not. Let's not fall back on this thing and then saying, well, it hasn't yet hit penetration. It's mainstream. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's buying it. It sets us up, unfortunately, for probably a little correction somewhere along the way. But if you're bullish on blockchain long term, the correction doesn't matter.
And just sit tight.
Just sit tight.
But don't go into the bad ICOs and don't go into the bad cryptocurrencies that you think are going to fail.
Exactly.
Right. And who knows who those are, but you can use the fundamentals to check them out.
Watch my show this week, and I didn't come here to punt my show, but I've really got a very special guest who, in my mind, he's the first guy that's put some kind of metric to ICOs. And that for me is the game changer.
Well, we're going to be starting very shortly. We're going to be starting almost daily, occasional updates with Run. So if you don't think this is enough to have him in once every 2 weeks or so, then we're going to have a lot more regular updates starting soon.
Yeah, I think my opinion, I think every podcast, every radio channel, every TV channel should report Bitcoin or talk about crypto. It baffles my mind.
You're still the only TV show?
We're still the only televised TV show in the world that is dedicated to crypto.
Unbelievable.
We've caught the attention of NBC in America, though. I'm flying to the States later this month and getting a feature on CNBC Fast Money. To talk about Africa and blockchain and what we're doing here, because they seem to think we're pioneering stuff because we're the only guys that have had the guts to start a crypto show.
Right.
And I mean, hats off to the guys at CNBC because they were the guys that bought into the idea and said, let's do something revolutionary. And it's paying dividends. It's by far the highest watched show on CNBC. It's paying huge dividends for them.
Well, there we go. And we're going to be bringing you some more of that right here on cliffcentral.com as well. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, guys.
Good. Nice to see you.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's Questa with Wale and Spirit.
Now, you know, Questa's voice can impregnate you on its own. His voice is just a little, it's too much. It's a lot.
That's powerful.
It's a lot.
CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning, and you can catch up on all the crypto news with Run. And by the way, we are launching a sort of update, which as the news comes in, Run will be doing. He'll be doing it almost every other morning. So keep an eye on that. And we'll be launching something soon in that world as well that is more of an idiot's guide for people who want to come into the crypto market for the first time. Ray Wixell is a brand development, marketing, and training consultant. He also started with Nike when they came into South Africa after apartheid. And he is the guy who managed for a while Costa Semenya, Oscar Pistorius, about, you know, 7 years before the murder that we all know about. But obviously a man who knows a huge amount about sport in South Africa, about athletics generally. He's commentated at the Olympics. There isn't anything he doesn't know. He himself is an ex-athlete, a former athlete. He ran at the Olympics. So he's a very interesting dude to talk to. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. Coming up, Ray Wixell, right here on CliffCentral.com. Good morning.
This is CliffCentral.com.